go ahead and call our April 13th, 2026 Columbia City Council work session to order. We have a couple of items on our agenda. The main one is our airport master plan and just an update and discussion around that. And then the second is we have a bunch of different kind of like reorganizing of our own schedule of work sessions and things like that. And so staff wanted to make sure to have a touch point with us to do that. So without further ado, I'm assuming I'm kicking it over to the man of the hour, Mike Parks.
Sure. Well, good evening.
No pressure.
No pressure. All right. I got the PowerPoint to work, I think. So okay. Should be okay. I'm Mike Parks, airport manager. I'm going to have get a few slides this evening, but generally happy to have a conversation about everything that's going on at the airport. And just really want to start out with our purpose statement. I think it's super important. The airport's purpose is to provide a safe, reliable, and efficient air transportation to support regional economic growth and a connectivity for residents in mid-Missouri. We've done a lot over the years to make things better at the airport, but of course the last year has probably grabbed more attention than it has in recent years. So with that, this evening, my intent is really to review the master plan. I want to talk about the growth of the airport in transportation for passengers, talk about the history, and then really what the outlook looks like, and then also just the department structure and how we're currently staffed. So I'm going to jump into the master plan. I hope everybody had time to review the entire document since I gave it to you
a week ago.
But yeah, exactly. So it is an extremely comprehensive plan. And of course, we also put a link online to make it easy for everybody to have access to and to be able to look at. But generally, it's to continue modernizing the Columbia Regional Airport to offer a safe and accessible facility connecting mid-Missouri to the world. So the last master plan that we completed was in 2009. We generally had accomplished all the work in that master plan from 2009. And so really the next steps is a snapshot here about a year and a half ago when we began this master plan process was really a snapshot from that period on. So as I go through this in reviewing some of the points from the executive summary, just keep in mind that this really was a snapshot a year and a half ago, and a lot's changed. And so that does make it a little bit challenging when it comes to master planning, of course, but it was a snapshot at that time. So with that, really the whole point of this is the growth of the airport, right? So we currently have flights to Chicago, Dallas, Denver. We've got Charlotte starting the night of May 21st, first flight out May 22nd. And then we have the Orlando flight starting on June 3rd, and we have Destin starting on June 5th. So several new flights, and ultimately this master plan was guided by the FAA. They walk alongside us with our consultant to really determine what things have we accomplished over the last 10, 15, 20 years, and really what's that snapshot look like in the future for projects that we need to ensure that our airport is ready and safe for growth. Some of the projects that came out of the master plan, and I'll talk a lot more about projects that we've completed, of course, were recently in front of you. We had the glycol recovery program and storage facility. We had the passenger boarding bridge. The aircraft rescue firefighting is a fire station that'll be built at the airport in future years. And then of course we have the, what we call the SRE building, a snow removal equipment building that I'll talk about a little bit later, that really is gonna be the kickstart for development on the south end of the airfield as well. And of course, it's grabbed a lot of attention is airport parking. So not necessarily is every project in the master plan going to be federally funded. It really is, again, it's what projects need to occur at the airport as we hit certain thresholds and growth of the airport. So I mentioned this snapshot a year and a half ago when we started the master plan. And I think this is something that I brought up about the passenger numbers at the airport. The FAA looking forward to 2044 projected us and approved a forecast of about 176,000 enplanements. 176,000 enplanements and people being flying out of the airport. Currently, we have an estimated, of course, flights are changing all the time, but we have an estimated of about 280,000 seats leaving the airport in 2026. So with a 73 to 75% load factor, we're exceeding this by about 25,000 this year. So we're definitely well ahead of the FAA forecast. And of course, we can't, you know, keep in mind, we can't back up the master plan and say, okay, we're going to start over because we got these new flights. It really is. We got to keep things moving based on the growth. But super exciting to say that 176,000 was forecasted in 2043. And again, we'll probably have that around October of this calendar year. So.
Mike,
I was going to ask you with that. So while we can't backcast on that review of that, does it influence kind of like some of your other programmatic, I assume it, the timeline for some of those things coming forward, and will you get to those?
It does. And so I think if we talk about the passenger boarding bridge, right? So the passenger boarding bridge, there was not a specific number of passengers that we were trying to accomplish to be able to accomplish that fourth passenger boarding bridge. However, based on the increased flights and increased projected growth on this forecast, we were able to have the FAA approve that fourth passenger boarding bridge because they knew the timeline of the flights plus the increased number of passengers. We had an expedited reason to make that happen. So we will adjust projects in this master plan based on, of course, we're going to have a real growth, right? And we're going to be able to point to real numbers soon instead of just projected. But we continue setting records as we go out throughout this calendar year. We're going to be able to go back to the FAA and say, okay, we projected 176,000 by 2043. We're at 195,000 for the calendar year. So at what point then can we expedite that fifth passenger boarding bridge, which of course is on that capital improvement plan that we shared as well. So we'll expedite those projects.
And then just to clarify, so 18 months ago, the estimate was we would be at 176,000 enplanements, like not just seats, right?
Enplanements
means people in seats by 2043, which we expect to hit in October of 2026.
That was just a guess off the top of my head.
Well, I mean,
October,
last year,
I would say we'd be close, but 176,000 October, I think would be fair. With a 200,000 in-seat number, I think that would be extremely reasonable to say that it'll happen.
All right, sorry, Nick, you had.
Well, I'm just wanting to be clear about these numbers you're talking about now, Mike. So the adjusted number, that's adjusted for what's happening now. We're having more flights and all
yes.
that.
Yeah. So that throws.
So that's your adjustment. I mean, that's the adjustment of the airport's adjustment.
That's correct.
FAA.
That's correct. So that's adjusted based on the addition of Allegiant coming in,
yeah.
and also that Charlotte route,
right.
and then also United added an additional Chicago route.
Yeah.
So it's based on the forecasted numbers that we have from American, United, and Allegiant, because American has also added capacity out of the airport.
And so we would hit, according to the, it's kind of hard to follow this, these lines. So we would, again, I think Barbara said this, but we'd hit 176,000 about when?
We would hit 176,000 people in seats probably around October of this year.
This year?
Yes.
That's a little ahead of schedule.
That's, yes.
And it doesn't take into account the possibility that other flights, other airlines might be added down the road, and I'm sure that has an impact on adding those other gates, right?
Well, it does, and I think, you know, one thing we need to keep in consideration is adjustment to flights, right? So we have 5 departures today to Chicago. You know, is there going to be an adjustment at that? That might be a little bit heavy on Chicago, probably. You know, they could draw back a Chicago.
You want to speak to that conversation that's happening right now nationally about O'Hare? There's discussions about the FAA restricting flights in and out of O'Hare because of that concern. Is that any concern of ours, or we're just kind of monitoring? We have no control over that.
We have no control. Ultimately, the airline's going to make those decisions,
right.
But that's exactly right. So could that impact us? Yes, absolutely. We could see United draw a flight back. We could see American draw a flight back to Chicago. And I don't know that that's necessarily a negative thing whatsoever. Again, we have a lot of capacity in Chicago. There's great competition between American and United flying to Chicago, which is a great thing for Mid-Missouri, right? We want those. We want options. We want a lot of different options for passengers. But in the instance that one of the airlines decides to draw down one of those routes, it's not a negative thing. Again, people will find a way to get there. We want our load factors high. We want the airlines to be profitable. We want them to do well. We have to fill seats to be able to maintain the capacity that we have. And so keeping five departures a day to Chicago, it's a lot of people. That's a lot of people going to Chicago. We do have demand and it's continuing to increase, but we'll have to watch those load factors.
Yeah. Valerie, and I apologize. We're going to be talking to you the whole time. I hope it's okay if we interrupt you.
Mike, oh, absolutely.
You can tell me if not. Okay. Yeah. Valerie.
Do we have revenue guarantees for the flights to Chicago still? And would that equation change if they call one back?
We do not. We have no revenue guarantees for Chicago.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, Vera.
What is that wobbly triangle shape above 2026? Is that indicative of anything?
I believe I meant to delete that out of there. I left a portion of something. I apologize.
That's okay. As long as I'm not missing anything out there.
No, no.
It's a new thing in charts these days.
Just adding shapes.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Any other questions about this? Again, you know, when I mentioned the 200,000 passenger number, really how I'm calculating that is, again, based on our previous calendar year, we had an average of about 75% load factor. And so going into this calendar year, looking at the capacity going out of the airport, I'm calculating 73 to 75% load factor. We're hopeful for more, but that's how that 200,000. So I believe that that number is a pretty conservative number and a reasonable number to be able to attain. So a little bit, and you probably read about the Airport Improvement Program, the AIP funding. We talk about this, of course, a lot during any type of federal projects that we bring to council. That's the ability for the FAA to identify projects that they're willing to participate in. In general, airports and communities are responsible for the maintenance of the airport. So if there's any sort of repairs to the runway, and when I say repairs, I mean small repairs, joint seal, any type of that maintenance related project, that's the responsibility of the airport itself. And then this AIP funding is a competitive program that really prioritizes projects based on the type of project that they are. So with that, you normally receive 90% funding for the capital project that's allowed in that program. And then each one of those projects is really rated for priority. So of course, as you would assume, a runway would be the highest priority, a taxiway is the second, the apron's the third, a parking lot's near the bottom. So anything that you have that's in good shape, we do, and I'm gonna mention all the projects that we've completed. We do pavement management studies. We're constantly reviewing the pavement at the airport. And we do all of these in this airport capital improvement plan. We do each one of these and we tie all the projects from the master plan that you've seen in the master plan based on a timeline of demand. We tie that into our airport capital improvement plan, so our ACIP, and we submit that to the FAA to competitively apply for federal grants. And so anytime I come to city council and say, I want to move forward on the glycol recovery program, ultimately, we've tried to move that forward. I've talked to the FAA. We've placed it in our ACIP, Airport Capital Improvement Plan, and the FAA has agreed that, yes, that's the next step based on the other projects that they have within the central region. So the central region that they're making decisions on is Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, and Iowa. So that's the central region of the FAA. Those are the ones that we're competing with those airports. They will move, we receive, just in funding-wise, we receive $1.3 million estimated dollars per year in entitlement funds that we can use entitlement funds. We can bank entitlement funds for future projects, so we can not use it a year and double it up and have 2.7 the next. But those entitlement funds are based on passenger numbers. And so at the mark of 100,000 passengers, you receive about $1.3 million in entitlement funding for an airport. That entitlement money goes towards this airport improvement plan, towards your projects, and then you receive discretionary money in addition to that, whatever's not funded by that those entitlement funds. So with that, each passenger that we have, so when I talk about the growth of the airport and the importance of continuing to increase our employments, each passenger is about $5.19 in additional entitlement funding that we receive in addition to the 100,000 employment number, which adds on to the 1.3 million. So, and I didn't write it down, 200,000 employments, you have an extra 100,000 at $5.19. That's your additional entitlement money that you would expect if you had 200,000 passengers flying out of the airport. It's based on employments, so it's based on people in seats is what they charge. That's in addition to our passenger facility charges, which is, of course, $4.50. So,
Mike, can I ask you, how would we see that? You know, because that's not necessarily like a line item that would come to us. So when, let's say, an airport project is coming across and the budget is coming to us, you know, we see the fiscal impact note. Like, would you normally call that out, or is that just kind of in your budget? That's just your revenues you're already expecting.
Yeah, so that's the federal money is held by them. So then we just utilize that money. So we wouldn't call out entitlement funds or discretionary funds. We would only say 90% federal funding. That 90%, maybe 50% of that might be entitlement, okay. 50% discretionary. In general, small projects, and I'm just going to say the passenger boarding bridge, a $1.8 million passenger boarding bridge, we probably have enough money in entitlement funds to pay for something like that. When you look at, if you looked at that capital improvement plan that I shared, you'll see big numbers, extremely large numbers. With that, and I'll just point out the runway reconstruction. Our primary runway reconstruction is about a $40 million project. We will not have enough entitlement money to pay for a $40 million runway. So with that, we will, the FAA helps us each year calculate exactly out where we're at with entitlement funding. They're also looking at the other airports and what priorities they have. And ultimately, Lambert may need a new runway and they may need $100 million. And so that might short everyone else. And then Columbia might need that $40 million. And so that then is spread around based on priorities and based on funding.
Thank you. Thanks, Ed. Oh, yeah, Tyler.
This is way off topic, but I think this is the slide that will touch on it most closely. Asked about soil testing near the glycol recovery or wherever planes currently de-ice via council inquiry. Do you have any information on our previous soil condition?
So we have records based on all of the testing that we do after the first de-icing event each year. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we have a de-icing event, we notify our contract engineering company, which is Engineering Survey and Services. They come out at the first day that there's any type of flow. So we have 8 testing sites that we test around the airport for any type of, I don't know all the details of the stormwater, so I don't want to go into that. But, you know, any type of, suspended, any type of chemicals in there, any jet fuel, anything like that. And then also, I know oxygen depletion, right? That's one of them. There are several of them that we've made improvements to the outflow areas. Okay. And so we'll have testing based on that first event every year that we submit to the DNR. And so when we talk about the de-icing project, a lot of that was driven by the communications that I've had with Department of Natural Resources based on previous testing. We know that glycol, although considered non-toxic, mm-hmm. still has an impact on the oxygen in the stormwater and probably, multiple other things that it can have impacts on. But ultimately, the conversation with DNR was, although we know there's impacts, we're doing everything we can to add riprap, make improvements to those locations to increase the oxygen and make those improvements to filter that water. Ultimately, what our goal was, was funding for this facility to contain this and then ship it out, dispose of it in a way that's acceptable to everyone, right?
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's a good project. We needed it. No disagreement here. Are you able to forward those testing? And does DNR regulate this in any manner? Do they have an established level that we have to reach for glycol?
They do.
They do for oxygen.
They do. So they have standards, those parameters that all of our testing has to meet, right? And so any type of exceedances, then we have to put that in a letter, what the plan is for those exceedances, what we're going to do to make those improvements moving forward. So
have we been in compliance? Have we exceeded?
Have we exceeded on some of the testing? Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And pretty consistently, really, just based on glycol, it does create an oxygen depletion. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've made several improvements to the outflow areas with riprap. And, you know, we've done several things over the years, making sure we're establishing strong vegetation for that natural flow. And then I think a lot of it is just continuing to communicate with DNR and building that relationship with them to let them know that we take this serious too, right? We want to make these improvements. And so I went up to Kirksville and went to headquarters. Time goes by fast. Maybe it's been 2 years now. And really, I sit down with them in their office because ultimately I wanted to get feedback from them on this is the type of system that we're looking at. This is the timeline. You know, is there anything else that we can do to make this better as well? And it was a great conversation. You know, any information that I would receive from them, I can pass that on to our engineering company, which is Burns & McDonnell, and really looking ahead of what can we do to make this better. And it was a great visit. Again, nothing more than communication, letting them know where we're at with this, and then getting any feedback from them that they have.
Yeah, thanks.
Sure. So next slide here. We've accomplished a lot. And so this slide here is a list of projects that we've accomplished probably in about the last 8 years or so. These are the projects that we've accomplished. Most of these projects were accomplished with federal funds at 90%. There's a handful on here that are locally funded only. Of course, the rental car facility. But, you know, other things, we talk about stormwater improvements, and we know the forever chemical and AFFF foam that's used for firefighting. One of the improvements that we made is our foam testing system with the fire trucks. That was one of the things that we were able to do. We can test the fire trucks now without spraying any type of foam on the ground, and we can meet the compliance for Part 139. Which is the certified airport requirements for the airport, or for the FAA. I thought it was interesting on the left side there and about the middle, it says Supplemental Terminal Area Master Plan. I think that's interesting to bring up because I talk about a little bit, you know, it is a snapshot. The master plan in general is a snapshot. Things change, as we know, things change pretty fast. So during that period that you have a master plan established, if something comes up that you need to do a study on, then you then have that option, such as this, when we were looking at the terminal, of doing a supplemental master plan just for that specific project if we feel like there might be the need for it. So that's what we did for the terminal. Of course, I'm happy to answer any questions on all these projects, pretty exciting projects, but happy to answer any questions about those.
Yeah. Mike, I think this would be a good time too, just for those who haven't been out to see and like tour with everything. What's your staff right now? When you have all these projects, what is your current staff? And I assume that's not probably a slide in here because it isn't a slide. Oh, okay. Never mind. You can wait. It can be like a teaser.
Okay. All right.
But wait.
We'll catch it then.
Okay.
Okay. Of course, the past is great. We've done a lot of projects out there. We've done a great job. And so, Mayor brought up staff. I can't give enough kudos to the staff and how we operate. Everything that we do is safety. There is nothing that we look at with more importance than safety. So it's a priority for if you're walking up the sidewalk, if you're taking a commercial aircraft, or if you're flying out on a private aircraft, safety is a priority. And so generally speaking, many of these projects have a major safety factor, whether it's security only or just an airfield safety, take precedent in that. But these are our current projects that we're working on. Some of these are definitely related to passenger comfort, passenger experience, but we also have some major development projects in there. The snow removal equipment design is in there. Of course, we're looking at construction of that next year. And although the snow removal equipment project doesn't sound maybe all that exciting, it houses snow removal equipment. It really is, because if you notice towards the bottom there, it says airports, rates and charges and a business plan. It's really all is tied together, because the snow removal equipment building is really the kickstart to the development of the south end of the airport. And so we know there's a tremendous amount of interest. I've been contacted and met with many people that are interested in building hangars at the airport that want to relocate their aircraft to Columbia. We have a fantastic facility. We also offer a lot of services that smaller airports don't offer. And so there's a big interest. The snow removal equipment building, although again, is only for snow removal, it really is, it's going to build the infrastructure to be able to kickstart that. So we're going to be able to build a taxi lane that goes out to the south end, which is really a driveway from the building out to the runway, right? So it gives direct access to the movement areas, which is where aircraft take off and land. But it also provides a road to that facility. So we're going to build a road on the south end of the airfield that's going to take you to that. And then in addition to that, of course, utilities will be placed in. This is a federally funded project. And I tie that to our rates and charges because we're doing a full overview of all of our rates and charges at the airport. And the last update was in 2008. Were the last numbered update, and the last adopted update was in 2012 for our rates and charges. And so with that said, with future development and future activity at the airport, the rates and charges are super important for future revenue sources for the airport. We're looking at everything from fuel flowage fees, which is impacting general aviation and commercial aviation. Any type of transient aircraft that come through the area that may be transitioning across the country, stop by and grab fuel. We're looking at office rent. We're looking at, you name it, we're looking at it. We're looking at all lease space, ground leases, and so forth. So ultimately, this business plan that we hired Wolpert to assist us on is we're evaluating what are other airports charging that have similar services. And so we just sent out a survey. We're requesting information on where should we be. And so, you know, we currently have about $2 million a year that's provided to the airport towards the operational cost of the airport. And ultimately, our goal is to be self-sustaining. We want to adjust our rates. We also want to provide a good value. That's super important to make sure that we're providing a good value, that airlines want to do business here, private aircraft want to do business here, but we can also charge a fair value for what we offer as well. Again, our airport offers a lot of services. We have 24-hour fire service. We have 24-hour law enforcement service. We have a long runway. We have very good condition pavement. And so we're offering a lot of services at the airport, and we just want to make sure as part of this rates and charges study, we're able to charge appropriately. And so the development that you're going to see at the airport in the future is definitely going to help offset some of our costs moving forward. And then ultimately, again, the plan is I really want the airport to be self-sustaining. I mean, it's like going after air service, right? It's that satisfaction of knowing you're making that difference. You're doing what you can to make the airport better, but I also want to make sure that we're also as self-sustaining as possible.
So I know we've got a couple questions, and I just want to also tee it up with this. So sometimes when we talk about revenue guarantee, sometimes it's also fee waivers. So yes. Will they be reviewing that too when it comes to growth? Like incentivizing growth, but then its impact if we're not collecting on some of those?
So that's part of an incentive program that you can adopt. We did not put that in their scope because ultimately we can create our own incentive plan. But fee waivers are a small, small price to pay to incentivize an airline to start a route or to expand a current route. But an incentive program, to adopt an incentive program, would be in our best interest, because that is a document that we can hand out at an air service conference. We can have conversations, say, here's the incentives that we have on the books that we're ready to offer today, that are super easy for any airline to see.
Flexible with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So I've got Don and then Nick. Don, you had a question.
So the figures that are contained in here in the, I used the term cash flow, I know that's not the correct term, but showing the projections and expenses above revenues and so on, does not take into, will the council get an updated one of those once you finish the rates and charges
review? Yes. Absolutely. So we will have an estimated impact on the adoption. So it'll go through City Council for the adoption of the new rates and charges, and then also a snapshot working with finance to see how that implementation and that timeline, what that's going to look like in the future.
Thanks.
Yeah. This is really a curiosity. I was so glad to be introduced to the concept of a sterile area at the airport and what that is, but what does that look like in terms of expansion at our airport, and when would that happen?
Yeah, so
I can't imagine doing it until the terminal itself is expanded. Is that what that's about, or is it something else?
Yeah, so we have several areas of the terminal that can be expanded. The sterile area is designed to be expanded to the south. So down by gate one, there will be a stationary bridge, an elevated stationary bridge that goes down south of that. And then that would branch off into additional passenger boarding bridges to the south. Okay. I will say that
this is, I just was double checking. This is not about what we have now and any expansion we can have. This is expansion that comes with the extension of the terminal itself.
That the fifth passenger boarding bridge.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Any questions about any of the current projects that we have now? And I'm happy to go into the rates and charges more if you would like, or
just, I guess just the question is, what's your timeline on it?
Yeah, we should have
scope of services right now going out.
That's correct. So we have, we should be able to adopt our new rates and charges. It'll be this fall, is about a timeline. And then of course, you know, any current leases are what they are, right?
Right.
So we can't adjust those, but moving forward for any type of development and business development at the airport, we'll be able to utilize those new rates and charges.
So most likely that might just be part of the fiscal year 27 budget for us?
I don't know that we'll have those numbers.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know that we'll be able to include those then, but it'll be close. So I think we'll have a good idea of where they're going. So.
Okay. Thank you.
So with this, I just wanted to talk about the project moving ahead. So I just mentioned about all the projects that we currently have. This is really a snapshot on the next 5 years. This only includes what's included in the airport capital improvement plan. As you all know, with the exponential growth that we've had with the airlines, there's been projects that have moved into the plan that weren't necessarily planned for. We know that we have to move quickly, so there can be adjustments to this. But right now, this is a snapshot on what the next 5 years looks like. And with that, it's just over $100 million investment in the airport over the next 5 years. And so we have tremendous capital improvement projects moving forward. Of course, these are all going to be federally funded. I'm going to say generally 90% federal funding for all of these. So this would be a local investment of about $10 million for this $100 million worth of work at the airport. Our airport was built in the 60s. Our primary runway now is 7,400 feet long, but 6,500 feet of that runway was built in the 60s. Staff's done a fantastic job. We've done a lot of runway repair projects. But what comes with growth is more activity and more wear. So we know that the replacement of the primary runway is definitely a priority. However, looking at the replacement of that primary runway was nearly impossible to be able to replace that with a crosswind runway that was only 5,500 feet long. There was a community in the central region that recently had to do a new runway. They had to suspend all commercial operations because they didn't have a place for American Airlines to land or take off. I think their service was suspended for about 8 months. That's a killer to a commercial airport. I'm glad that it didn't hurt them long term. However, it definitely hurt them on that side of things with the airline. So what we're really looking at here is we're really trying to plan over the next 5 years is we want to make sure that we extend the crosswind runway. We have to be ready to do the big project. Not that the crosswind's a small project by any means, since it's a $21 million project. But that really will open up the opportunity to reconstruct that primary runway. With that said, it also, this is a win-win because it's going to give us the opportunity to reconstruct the primary runway, but it also improves the crosswind runway to a point that we're able to do maintenance on either runway without impacting any commercial operations. And so the way the safety standards are now, we have to mow in between aircraft operations, which if you can imagine how challenging that is today compared to what it used to be. The safety area on the runway is 250 feet wide. That means that you're going out about 125 feet of the grass is in that safety area. You can't mow during any aircraft operations. So you literally see John Deere mowers running in, they make a few passes and they hurry up and drive out and they wait. So it's extremely long process. And so having this extended crosswind runway is really gonna make an efficiency difference also in the next few years. I could probably talk for all day.
I'm trying to move ahead here.
I know we have
more to go.
This is just kind of a snapshot, a little bit hard to see on here, but just kind of the airfield. You know, I mentioned the snow removal equipment building, which is on the bottom right here. That's really that development on the south end. You can tell I'm super excited about that just because that is a piece of property at the airport that's underdeveloped. That has a high potential of future expansion. And so being able to build that facility down there is definitely going to open that up. You see the picture of, I guess there's no T-hanger picture there. Yes, there is. Up on the top right, the picture of the hangars down there. That's really the intent of that area is we'll develop it. We'll get it started. We'll have a new facility to be able to house our chemicals and our equipment. And then in addition to that, we'll have that direct access for aircraft in development. The de-icing pad that you all considered the other night at council and approved to move forward on is that second from right bottom. That's the location of the de-icing pad straight east of that out there on the ramp. And of course, the improved parking, and I guess I can use this. You know, one of the things that we're doing looking at parking is we're consistently looking at the master plan on what is the preferred alternative to parking, right? What is the best way to do this? What's the best way to develop? We want that long-term improvement that's going to benefit us no matter what, no matter how big we get, no matter how busy we get. And so with that, as part of this would be to relocate Airport Drive. And so Airport Drive would actually come along the backside of the parking. And so it would be rerouted. And so the other night at council, one of the considerations is, you know, a bid alternate to determine how much does it cost to pave just this small section? And then what is our timeline to be able to reroute Airport Drive? We want to make sure that we're providing the best value in any of the improvements that we're making. So.
Can you remind us, Mike, in that kind of snapshot of there, is that all city owned for that, or you know that part of kind of south of Airport Drive? What is when does our boundaries end?
Yeah, so the airport property line is about this right here.
Okay.
That is about the back side of the airport. So we don't own much property on the west side of the airport. So okay. Behind that parking that you currently see, that's generally private property.
The edge. Okay.
Yeah.
And then how far south do we own?
South, we go all the way down to the gravel road, down to the south end of the airfield, and then north all the way to Route H, east out to Rangeline Road.
Okay.
And then west is the most restricted, where we have all of our everything, really. That's the most restricted growth area. So
that tracks. Thanks.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, so I thought I was long-winded about development projects, but now we're talking about air service, so I could probably even go into more details about this. We've accomplished a lot, which has been a great story for Columbia and Mid-Missouri, not just, you know, direct access, but also connectivity across the world. And so everybody is now realizing you really can get there from here. And the benefits of flying Columbia, the benefits of having that convenient airport at your back door is definitely the word's getting out, and we're growing quickly. So with that, our strategic goal really is we want to increase frequency, we want to increase capacity, and we want to make sure that we're providing the routes that people are looking for. So of course we do passenger development analysis. We're looking at where people are flying. We get a lot of information from the airlines. They know where people are flying, but at the end of the day, we also listen to people as well. We get a lot of feedback, get a lot of emails about where people want to go. And I hear probably just as much about frequency than I do anything else now. That really is the feedback that we get. You know, we heard at the community summit, that was probably the best community summit ever, because they're like, well, I mean, you kind of have everything that we're looking for, but maybe, and it was Bismarck or something, maybe there, but you know, it was great to hear that, because ultimately, we're accomplishing what we want to accomplish, right? We want to make sure that we're getting people from Columbia, Mid-Missouri to where they want to go, whether that's a vacation destination or a business destination. It's a major impact to the economy in everywhere in Mid-Missouri. So with that, just a little bit about seats daily in August of 2025. We had about 380 seats flying out of the airport. I probably should have run the numbers from like 2008, 2012 to make this more impressive. But we had 380 seats daily August, 680 in December. And then, of course, looking at this summer, we're getting near that 1,000 seat a day.
I think doubling was also impressive within 1 year.
Pretty impressive. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So a lot of growth. But I use this slide, and I try to get this slide updated every chance I get. This really takes us through the end of 2025. And this compares us to other airports in the Midwest and the Central region. So we've got Dubuque, Grand Island, Nebraska, Joplin, Manhattan, Sioux City. I always like to say Manhattan is our closest airport when it comes to growth. Manhattan's a light community. And so with that, you can see that Manhattan is just below us. This goes to the end of 2025. We had about 120,000 enplanements, people leaving Columbia, and Manhattan was just a little bit over 80,000. Of course, as you can imagine, our line here is probably going to be about right up in here this year. And so I'll definitely continue using this graph as I show others how the airport is doing. You know, I can't say enough about what this means for the rebound of traffic here also, right? So obviously in 2019, we had about 130,000 people fly out. That was our highest year ever. And that was definitely a big topic when it came to building a new terminal. Of course, 2020 happens. We don't have to go into the details. But I think what this shows is the resilience of this region, right? I think this shows a nice steady growth since then. Of course, we've been fortunate enough that the airlines have seen the benefits of flying out of Columbia. They know what demand there really is. Of course, the construction on I-70, all of these different things that are having an impact on the growth and the ability for us to retain the passengers that are flying out of Columbia. But what I think is even more important is that the fact that when we reach that 200,000 enplanement, is to continue that gradual increase. We, you know, we're not looking for a spike at that rate. We're really looking at that continual gradual increase, like what we saw from 2020 moving forward. And that sustainable growth is really what we're looking for, because again, we wanna make sure that we're filling the seats, and we wanna make sure that we have that sustainability for the airlines to continue success here at the airport. hate to leave that slide. But. So this is a graph here. This goes all the way back to Q1 of 2012. This includes, of course, Delta, Frontier, American, Allegiant, United. It kind of gives you a graph here of what was in 2019, I think maybe is the most important thing. During that quarter, is it quarter two, 2019, we had 53,000 seats. And then fast forwarding here, we're at about 81,000 seats this summer. And I think also, you know, I mean, the potential of growth with our Allegiant partner is likely. We know that seats are selling fast. And so those passenger numbers with that size of a jet leaving Colombia can grow really, really quickly with 180 passenger jet flying out. So those seats can change dramatically as we move forward. So you asked about staffing, and I think city managers.
So one of the things that we want to talk about is, you know, what does this airport actually become? And when it started off, it was a division in public works, I believe.
Yes.
And it moved on to be part of economic development, then moved it to the city manager's office. And where I think we're heading toward is it really needs to be its own standalone department. And so what does that look like? And so some of the things we're talking about doing is adding an airport director, a deputy director, a maintenance supervisor. Part of what's happened is we've shifted the way we do public safety. At one point, it was all public safety. So public safety officers, which were all reported to the airport manager. Because of post-certification, what we know is our police department has to be post-certified, so that's been separated out. The fire service has become more and more, where it's more in sync that it needs to really be part of the fire department. And so that's also something that's going to occur. One of the things I know in the plan is to actually build a fire facility. Do you know when that's planned for?
32.
And because of the growth of the airport, that may be a project that kind of speeds up, because as we're seeing more and more planes, that need for fire service is going to be more greater. And so one of the thoughts is we want to really talk about creating this as an airport department. So we would add three positions. Actually, I think, is it on for first week of this next council meeting?
Yes, the shuttle
on April 20th.
Right. With the expanded airport parking, the need for shuttle drivers, so it's becoming apparent. And so how do we get people from that south a lot? I think that's planned for June.
Yeah, so we'll have, the goal is to have all three of these positions filled. We'll start the shuttle program probably the third week of May to go ahead and get the practice runs in. And of course, we know that that traffic definitely is going to increase at the beginning of June. So we'll be picking up passengers from the south parking lot, which is where we're adding those 600 spaces. That's a very large parking lot. We're also going to capture the passengers at the north end, which is where we're adding all that capacity at the north end as well.
So with the six new positions, we'll do some reassignment. So reassign the airport safety officer to an airport operations specialist, reassign the airport safety supervisor to airport operations supervisor, and then reassign the assistant to the airport manager to an assistant to the airport director. We would eliminate the airport manager position. Eliminate, because when it was part of economic development, we were funding half of the salary for economic development director out of the airport. That would no longer occur. And then we would eliminate the airport safety, one airport safety officer position. Were there any other changes, Mike?
Yeah, that'll be all.
Do you have like the budgetary impact estimated with this?
Kathy has.
Yeah, so budget.
Ask her the microphone, Vera, would you mind? Thank you.
So budget gave some preliminary numbers. If we did these changes mid-year, meaning mid-FY26, we already know the estimate for the three shuttle drivers is about 74,500 and some change. If we did the rest of these mid-year, budget estimates that to be an additional $50,000 in this fiscal year. So for a full fiscal year, and this is benefits and everything, they have $406,000 as an estimate. Now, we don't know what we're going to hire people in at what rate. We have pay ranges. So that would, this is an estimate for a budget.
So this year, any of the changes would just be like the, wait, like 125 or something for the mid-year, because that's a 74 and then the 50.
Correct.
But then fiscal year 27,
yes,
you have estimated would be
$406,000.
In addition to what the current budget is.
That's correct.
Why doesn't mid-year equal up to half of that?
Because we don't expect to hire until June.
Okay,
so it's only for a few months in this fiscal year.
Okay. Thank you.
We think we can hire hopefully the airport shuttle drivers sooner, because we've already had that coming to council for introduction at the next week.
Okay.
But the higher paid positions we think would only be for a couple of months in this fiscal.
And would that be then part of kind of like what came to us for the budget? This would be a mid-year, so it would be automatically included in fiscal year 27 if it passes.
That's correct.
Okay. And does the budget have that with the funding for the airport?
It does. And like Mike said, the goal is ultimately for the airport to be a little bit more self-sustaining.
Mm-hmm.
But at the present moment, we do have the capacity.
So the revenues that you talked about, the fee structure that you're studying right now, those would be additional potential revenues that would help offset what is coming into this?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, done. Done, and then Betsy, and then Vera. We can take back the mic from you. All right, done.
For the shuttle drivers, will those be CDL positions, or will the buses be small enough that it won't need to be a CDL required?
They're 15 passenger. Kathy, jump in if I'm misspeaking here. They're 15 passenger or less, so they're not CDL, but they require a Class E, and they do require DOT physical process and drug testing, but not a CDL.
Betsy.
Could you go back and explain to me why you want this to be a separate department?
Just because
I must have missed that somewhere. I mean, like, what makes that a necessary thing now as opposed to leaving it in the city manager's office?
Just because of the growth of the airport, because of the need for how we manage. It's at this point now where it's kind of grown itself out of being just a division. It is really needs to be its own standalone department just because of just the capacity of everything that's being done.
Two questions. First, budget, so I might have to pass it back to you. Where will that half FTE of the economic development director be moved to if it's taken away from here?
Yeah, so it's back to the Stone Department. So part of it's through ready membership, the other part is through general fund.
And do we have room in the budget in the general fund for that move?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. And then the other question, just what is the logic or the thought behind the assistant to airport manager is just a reassignment, but manager to director is a full elimination of a position and creating a new position?
Yes.
What's the thought behind that?
I just want to clarify the reassignments there, those are title changes. That is all those are. There is no change to pay. And the assistant to the airport manager changing it to assistant to the airport director would only happen if we added an airport director position. So I can answer that part of it. If we add both a airport director and a deputy airport director, part of offsetting that cost is eliminating the airport manager position. So you would be adding two different classifications that don't exist today and eliminating an airport manager.
I think the question is more, why is the airport manager being added as a new position rather than just reassigning? Or why is airport director being added as a new position rather than just reassigning from manager to director?
Because there will be some type of selection process for the airport.
Additional questions on this one? Yeah, Valerie, you can grab the mic, please.
Never mind. I answered my own question looking at the slide.
I think one thing that would be useful going forward from here is that sort of like benchmarking on other cities that have this. You're right, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're right. We started off as a division in public works. At that time, what was the employment, you know, what was the growth of that? and then seeing how other, so you mentioned Manhattan, is there's a department at their city municipal, you know, like just kind of understanding that. Because I think one of the things that you talk about is these are then direct reports to, you know, how is that going to work within your flow?
Correct.
How is that any different than right now Mike Park's talking to you? You know, I mean, I think it'd be good to kind of see those best practices that other cities are experiencing their growth at their airport as well.
And I think that's something you actually had me look at. Yes.
Yeah.
So we can provide that.
Yeah. And then for us, you know, we're obviously different than Lambert is a different kind of beast.
Yes,
it with is. It's similar with Kansas City. So like, I don't think comparing, yeah, it's different. And then at what point do we start to have the conversation about a regional transportation, regional air authority?
And that's a great, and I think that's a great segue. I think it happens with growth. So part of what Mike looks at is the number of, how do we impact the region? And so as we grow and we have a larger impact, you will see the opportunity to bring in more. And so that's where you kind of go from being a, because we call ourselves a regional airport, we're more of a municipal airport, but we do affect the region. But at some point there may be a need to actually turn us into a more of a regional authority.
Right.
And so what is that benchmarking? At what point do we start having those conversations? And what does that look like?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that those partners have that capacity. So that's where it becomes, when does it become really just Columbia?
Yes.
For that thing? Yeah, Nick.
Well, I'm just gonna say a word of support for this. One of the things in looking through the plan and then just looking at what's happening, our most recent meeting, one of the concerns I have is that we're going to grow at such a rate that we're not going to be able to keep up with it. And this kind of thing would make it more efficient, the management of the airport itself. And Mike, this causes me to reflect on what you've said about the airport being self-sufficient. That really should be a stated and quantified goal, because as it grows, the city is not going to be able, I think, to keep up easily with the increased expenses that are going to come with that. And absolutely. So all of that together fits together well, and I appreciate the presentation of it.
Yeah. I've got Jackie and then Valerie.
To that point, and I don't know if I'll be able to answer this. Do you have, at this point with the information given, when you think we would reach that self-sustainability mark? I mean, looking at the future revenues and expenses page in on 813 in this book, like in fiscal year 43, it's still, we're nowhere near self-sustainable.
With our current rate structure, correct.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm just gonna give you an example of our ground lease rate. We currently charge 8 cents a foot. I believe that, quote me exactly, but I believe Jefferson City is at about 24 cents, 25 cents a foot. So we're at about a third of the land lease rate at the General Aviation in Jeff City. And so that's just one example. You know, of course, office rent, landing fees, we're at 62 cents per 1,000 pounds. I think maybe the lowest landing fee I've seen in a long time is about $1. It's about twice as much, right? That's probably on the low end. So there's a lot of room for additional revenue for our airport. But of course, it's all about communication, right? It's all about making sure that we're communicating that and the justification for it. We know that we have the services. We know that our airport offers a lot more than what we charge for. So I would anticipate that would be an easy transition to move into with higher revenues.
So changing those rates and fees, but doing so in a way that doesn't scare off our providers.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, as I've always said, when you talk to somebody who's wanting to develop on property, being the cheapest is not always going to bring you that business, right? It's ultimately charging for the value that you offer. And we offer a lot of value in Columbia. And we just need to make sure that we're charging a fair market rate for our property. So
thank you.
Valerie. Yeah, do you have any kind of figure on the other airports our size experiencing our growth, whether they are self-sustaining and at, Yeah. I guess at what size self-sustaining is typical for an airport?
I would add to that, is any airport self-sustaining? Yeah. So, I mean, that's my first thought. I was like, is that even possible? Sorry.
Me too.
But yeah, if there's comparables, tell Valerie, please.
Well, I think that, I don't think I can name one off the top of my head. I know that we can do a better job of bringing in the revenue again. I keep coming back to, we could do a better job of charging a reasonable rate for what we offer. So.
Yeah, Betsy, grab the microphone.
Can I just ask why we've never done that yet? I mean, it sounds like we're way behind, like not just a little bit behind.
It's not the only thing we've been dealing with like that.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Nick?
It's not the only thing like that we've been dealing with. That's what I'm sitting here thinking. It's like all these fees, business license fees and all that, we just seem to be behind in a number of ways. This is just another example, but it's a good question, I think.
Maybe we need to strive to change that a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Well, and I think to that point, right now, we have multiple reviews happening. So do you happen to have, like, off the top of your head, the different?
Yeah, so right now we're doing a cost of service study for all our rates. And so that's looking at, for everything that we do, it's really understanding what the cost of doing the business is. The one thing is, when we talk to our residents about, here's a need we have, we can't really articulate what it costs to put out a fire, what it costs to pave a street, what it costs to plow a street. And so that's one of the analysis that we're doing right now, is actually looking at the cost of service for everything that we do.
What's the timeline on that project?
Oh, that is, I want to say it should be before you guys by midsummer.
Is this a consultant thing? Is this something we know ourselves? Because we know what we pay for stuff.
Well, we know what we pay for it, but we also need to look at what the economy of scale is for looking at it through the business of doing the work. And so we're doing it two ways. Some of this is done by a consultant, and some of it's done by our public management, PMO office, our project management office. And so we are doing this role analysis of everything that we do. We're also looking at our parks rates, we're looking at our business license fees, we're looking at utility rates. And so you'll see a lot of that come before you, especially during this budget process, to really start talking about what we're doing and why we're doing it.
I think we have two cost of service studies coming up, results in the next month.
Yes.
Both for solid waste and sewer, and then electric.
Yeah, in the time that I've been on council, and even in my recent memory of being an engaged citizen, I've seen a number of individual cost of service studies coming through each department for their fees. And we're still finding that we're far behind often. I'm wondering, like, prior to this, like over the past decade or so, did we usually have by each department cost of service fee studies? And were we opting to follow them, or did we choose not to?
Or did we just not do
it? Just from my experience over the last couple of decades, is that a lot of it's been, those are usually utility driven. Mm-hmm. So it's usually the utility departments, and they had like that 5-year requirement for theirs. It had not been the common practice of having it in general fund. And even the fee ones, right? At least I can't remember. I don't know if anyone else can. I don't know if anyone else remembers us ever doing one for other departments.
No, I think you're correct. I think most likely the fees that we've been adjusting have been utility fees. And those are being done as we look at our rates for our residents. We haven't really looked at the cost of service actually doing the work that we do as a municipality.
But we're fixing that.
But we are fixing that.
Are payment in lieu fees included in the fee structure study, out of curiosity?
Payment in lieu of that's more geared toward our utilities when we look at what we would charge an organization that doesn't pay taxes. And so I don't believe that's part of this study analysis. I think that's more something that we do in-house.
We have a number of them for development permits.
Yeah. So timeline on this potentially coming to council. Obviously, we know that April 20th has the three shuttle bus drivers
for the buses that we just approved at the last two council meetings ago, I think. So the timeline for this coming, you mentioned mid-year, Kathy, with some of that additional information that council has requested, do we expect that coming to us in May or June or?
Most likely it'll be either end of May or early June.
That is my last slide. Happy to answer any questions. I didn't want to put a ton of slides because that was more of a just a general conversation.
So yeah, Nick.
Well, I wanted to put Don on the spot. You were on the steering committee for this. Yeah. And I'm just wondering if there's anything outstanding for you that hasn't been a part of what Mike's presented. Any concerns that you might have after spending that time going through the process or concerns or otherwise?
Yeah, no, it's just a lot of this, especially we talked about as part of the process. So this is, it's good to kind of see it all consolidated in one place, be able to present to you the part about reconfiguring the parking area, moving, Airport Drive, paved, garage, whatever, the recommendations, extending the crosswind runway, doing that first so then we can reconstruct and eventually extend the main runway. Just kind of see it all put together in one place. I don't think there was really any concerns that I had that I didn't see addressed in this. I did have a couple of specific questions about it. Which I can get into if you want me to, but other than that, or a suggestion. But other than that, no, this pretty much encapsulates everything, incorporates everything that I saw. So, but thank you for asking. But, I guess the answer is no.
And thank you for that, for service on that. I will note we also have at least one member of our airport advisory board. So I don't know if Gary Thompson, Gary, if you want to come up, you can grab any of the microphones. I stole it to Carlin so you could use this one if you have any comments to say.
Thank you very much. Yes, I'm Gary Thompson. I have a pleasure serving as a vice chair of the advisory board. Two points I would just like to add for your further consideration. Part of what's related to your question, Betsy, there's no excuse for not reviewing those services other than this airport's been really busy and a lot going on for the last 8 years, and frankly, it's just not gotten the priority. We have one person, and this has been a concern of the advisory board for some time, both from a workload and getting the things done that need to get done with everything going on. And then the other thing that I would just point out, the advisory board's had numerous discussions about, is just frankly from a risk management standpoint. We've got a major airport happening right here, and it's all in the hands of one person currently. So this proposed structure would provide some really needed risk management protections to the city and to the airport going forward. So I just wanted to add those comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Sure, yeah. And I think that's where I got to earlier when you had all those list of projects. And I was like, what's your staffing level? So I get that you're talking about what the projected is, but can you answer that? What is your staff? What is your FTE for the airport? And what are those positions right now?
Yes.
And then to that, one thing that I think it's important as we have these conversations, this is a fantastic master plan. It doesn't actually even touch on the economic impact that the airport has on us in our region and City of Columbia. So I think that's one thing that would be a good appendix to add for that. Like, what is the return on investment for these that we see? And so maybe part of the conversation as well. But can you speak to your current staffing levels?
Yeah, so current staffing levels, 20 FTEs, in addition to myself, that includes operations staff. So operations staff is the airport safety officers. Their duties are generally field inspections. They take care of all the pavement, markings, lighting, all those critical inspections that are required by the FAA. They also take care of EMS, and they also take care of aircraft rescue firefighting. So each one of those components is required by the FAA for a certified airport. There's 9 of those positions, and then they have a supervisor. So that's the operations side of things.
So that's half your staff right there.
Right.
Go on.
So then we have three custodial positions that report directly to me. Their primary duties are the main terminal, right, the new terminal. And so we don't have 24-hour coverage, but we have really good coverage with those three maintenance tech ones. And then we have four maintenance tech two positions. The maintenance tech two positions are in charge of all of the snow removal, lighting repairs, painting, signage replacement, anything airfield and facility higher end type repairs are all taken care of those four people. They report to myself, and then we have a maintenance crew leader position. That position really kind of aligns just the work, priority work for the day for those maintenance tech two positions. And then we have a full-time assistant to the airport manager that we just filled, and that position is an admin position for me to assist with council type things, all the bills, all the FAA grant requirements. That's a heavy load for that person.
Yeah. So I didn't hear any like additional people to help you with like the growth plans and do it. Okay, okay. Just one thing. Yeah, Val, you already handled.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I need a figure on this, but one of the things that I've been curious as we're discussing separating this as an individual department is if there's any expected impact to the bandwidth that the city manager's office has as a result of moving this to its own department. How much?
Oh, we'll still have our general oversight. I just think for the airport itself, adding the additional staff will help with the just the growth that's needed and the management of all that growth. You know, Mike has a huge lift, and you know, it's you know, not bragging on Mike a little too much, but you know, he doesn't take vacation, he doesn't take any time off, he needs to. You know, I know this is coming from me, but you know, the additional resources will help just make the airport run better, and so. No, we're always there to support. I just, when you just look at the complexity of everything that's going on, it makes sense for it to become its own standalone.
Any other questions for DeCarlin or Mike on this one? No, appreciate the update and the, you know, light reading.
Sure, absolutely.
The weekend. Appreciate that. Now, thank you for this, Mike. Really, really impressed with the growth and the success of this. And so you can't get enough appreciation for that. And we hear it time and time again from our community partners and the advisory board, who also are big fans. Yeah, Nick.
I would just say, Mike, I hope you'll take a vacation. there are multiple opportunities to fly in and out of our city. And if you'll just look into that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, thank you, Mike. Appreciate the airport update.
Thank you for your all support.
So we've just got one other thing to kind of do. So this would be the time to get out your calendars and look at some of these things, or not really calendars, but some of the things we have upcoming. So first off, we have our normal appointments to the Planning and Zoning Commission. And Sheila, I might ask you, I might need you to come up here. Because some of these, so we have two pre-councils coming up in the next month or month and a half that are required to be those pre-councils because it is our consultant coming in for the electric cost of service study or the IERMP, as well as the one for our solid waste and sewer cost of service, which might affect our ability to interview our planning and zoning applicants. And at this time, we have seven applicants. Usually we give 7 to 10 minutes per person. I don't think we normally, I think sometimes we've done seven at seven at a time.
It really depends on how long people speak.
Right, so the deadline officially is May 8th. Sure. And so are you asking for whether or not you're on, you're just not loud. are you asking, or do we have the potential of doing the interviews at that second meeting in May, or is it not enough time? Or are we trying to see if we could start the pre-council earlier?
So right now, May 4th and May 18th both have an hour and a half scheduled for the consultant. So I guess my point is, and I don't know if you guys are going to continue advertising for PNC like you have in the past. If you do that, we could get more applicants. Yeah. So I just don't know where you're going to be and when you're wanting to do these interviews, but April 20th is booked with the special meeting and then the regular council meeting. May 4th, an hour and a half is consultant. May 18th, an hour and a half is consultant. The terms of the current members are up May 31st, and there is not a provision in the code for this one to allow them to continue until their seat is filled. So there is on some, but not on this one for whatever reason, I'm not sure. So, and I don't know if the people who are up, even only one thus far has reapplied. So I don't even know if the other one would want to fill in, even if they had that option.
Right. And so part of the option that we have is that we have two 30-minute blocks on both of those meetings that we could interview some who have already applied, right, who have already submitted at that May 4th meeting.
Can we do it on the off Monday?
So the off Monday is our closed meeting on personnel, and I don't know if we expect to take the full 2 hours. We could potentially do, we could even do like a whole group of these, because that, so the off Monday is May 11th. It would have only just closed on the Friday before, so we couldn't do all of them on that time. We could do what we've received so far, a mixture of those. I guess the question is like, are you guys okay if we split them up over multiple pre-councils so that we have an opportunity to interview all, and then we kind of like front load, right, the applicants we've received, but knowing that we could still potentially be interviewing on the May 18th. And then I'll just ask for the city manager's office. This is an annual thing, so making sure that we don't allow an outside, like my priority for us is that we are interviewing our PMZ applicants at that meeting, knowing that this is an important board. Similarly to what when we do Water and Land Advisory Board and CPRB, to make sure that we have time on the pre-councils to do those interviews.
So 30 minutes, especially if you want a break in between the meetings, is not a lot of time. Would you guys consider starting at 4:30 in order to do the interviews or get with the consultant and be done with the consultant by a certain time? Now I need to work with manager's office on right. that. But for both of those meetings to split it up, would you consider starting at 4:30?
Could you, you're kind of like the harder you would...
I can make that work. Yeah.
Okay.
I would want to make sure I prefer the second idea where we front load the consultant because we know our applicants for PNZ will also most likely be working until 5.
Okay. Yeah. Valerie.
So are we looking at starting at 4:30 for one meeting or for several meetings to space them out in that case?
Are you guys going to ask me to continue advertising another month?
Yes.
Okay. If that's the plan, then I cannot answer that question because I don't know okay. how many applicants we're talking.
Is that an issue if we start at 4:30 for both May 4th and May 18th for your schedule?
That's fine. I just need to know in advance so I can get childcare.
Yeah.
I think that if we are going to advertise it, we should probably assume that we will need to start at 4:30 at both meetings.
Okay. And the other option is... for May 11th to use part of that also for interviews.
It's just that we might get more and you wouldn't have time to get it scheduled by Friday to Monday.
Yeah, so I will play with everything once I know more and as applications come in if they're qualified and then we'll just figure it out from there.
Okay. So for sure the May 4th, I guess we'll then see on the May 18th one based on if we get more. Yeah, okay. Next on, do you have direction on that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Next one is that for Citizens Police Review Board, we have one resignation that we probably won't advertise until that happens officially or until the end of the term. So this means that we might be doing a June 15th interview for both that position, as well as our two openings on the Water and Light Advisory Board. So just giving the heads up on that one. And does that work okay with the capital improvement projects timing, DeCarlin? I think that's your other pre-council.
And there was not a time tied to it for me to even play with.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll be doing those sort of advertisements at that time.
And interviews on the 15th, tentatively.
Correct. And then your next one on your list, Sheila made me a list of things that I have to do. I'm not this smart to actually know this. Next one is scheduling the group city council photo. What did you have?
I don't have anything in mind, but it's something where all of you will be here and where you're willing to
have your photo taken.
Yeah, be a little bit more dressed up if you care.
And Jackie, you're missing the April 20th. Is
we
that correct?
We wouldn't have time then.
Well, I'm just scheduling. So it might be then the first meeting in May. So May 4th. Is that what we're thinking?
May 4th and May 18th are booked.
Oh, that's true.
Okay. And I wouldn't want to.
Yeah.
Because then I'll have to look camera ready my whole workday.
Maybe let's do a, we can do a doodle on this and maybe we can do it on an off, right? You know, like maybe even potentially before the off Monday. What is that one? Get off my schedule.
June
May 8th. May 11th.
It's up to you.
We could potentially do it on May 11th, which is our off Monday work session. Everyone's going to be in town.
Okay. I'll make sure we can get a photographer.
Okay.
It's in staff, but still need to make sure.
Right. Okay, and then next on my list is, so because Monday is a special pre-council now, we have to reschedule our revenue forecast discussion and utility revenues discussion. DeCarlin, this might be a you question, is like, when do you need that by, and are we looking that this would be an off Monday, like a special work session?
It's part of the budget discussion, and so sooner the better, and so it probably would make it better be suited to be an off Monday meeting, but we just need to get it in so we can actually start the budget discussion.
Do you want people to look at their calendars this moment, or you doodle poll this?
We can sign up.
Because right now May 11th is booked.
Correct.
June 8th is booked. Like you're talking about end of July before we can do this, and we can't do that. So do we need to reschedule May 11th? To something else, or do a not off Monday, but just a random day.
So May 11th, for reminder of council, that's usually kind of like shortly after, you know, an election, kind of do a personnel check-in, and we kind of touch base on our three employees that we have, talking about the scheduling for that. So we could potentially cover some of those things at a different time, or I can try to update, or we can try to update staff and do the May 11th. Rather than our personnel check-in, do it as the revenue forecasting and utility revenues discussion. Does that work for council?
Would that change? Because did we schedule planning that we would interview P&Z on the 11th? And would that change our ability to do that?
I don't think it would. Because we could potentially just do our interviews at the 4th and the 18th.
That's what I wrote down. My schedule.
It's really hard to say until we get all the applicants.
So doing the May 11th off as a utility, sorry, I keep losing where I am, revenue forecast discussion and utility revenues discussion.
And that's also just an hour and a half, so if we needed to add, and since it's not a 7 o'clock push to get to another council meeting, we could add some P&Z if we needed to.
I think it might be 2 hours. The
inside the thing, the spreadsheet, so 1.5, but we can figure that out later. As long as that date works.
Yeah, Valerie, you had a question?
I really like that personnel check-in sooner rather than later, especially when new council members join. I don't know. I also really hate calling additional meetings because that's hard on everybody's schedules.
Yeah.
When would we reschedule the May 11th one too?
Unless you guys are open to a random day, it probably won't happen until July.
Yeah.
What about like May 12th? That's the Tuesday after the next. I mean, it would mean we'd have two meetings in a row on an off week, but it keeps us from having, from splitting it up to a fourth week or trying to do it around Memorial Day or whatever. Might it be worth just doing it either in the evening on the 12th or I don't know what everybody's schedule is like. Just getting there over with.
You have availability on Tuesday, May 12th?
You could.
Yes.
Sorry, didn't we cancel meetings in July because of renovation? The first meeting in July. That's why
renovation.
It would be end of July before we got to it.
I mean,
okay.
We could actually, that meeting doesn't have to be in this space. Because once you go in the motion to go to a closed meeting, we can go
for personnel.
Wherever for personnel.
Right.
if you're willing to wait until June.
July.
We've met over here before.
Yeah. It's still your, regardless of what you do, you're pushing it till July, unless you pick another day. And I will say that week of May 11, 12, blah, blah, is the retreat weekend. So
oh, yeah.
Right.
So you already
I don't
have.
Know if you
never
want
mind.
That many
we together.
Let's
maybe that's
July.
The reason that Tuesday is free as it is. Now, okay. The other thing is, do we need to have this many meetings? I mean, do we really need to have a personnel check in with all of us? Do we just need to fold Christina in? Can we make these hour? I mean, I know we already try and do that. This is half an hour, this is an hour, but maybe we need to somehow or another get more efficient rather than just having more meetings.
You needed to then tell staff to stop doing new development things that they needed to update us on. But
well, that would be true too.
Yeah, but and I don't see that happening. And
I don't either, but I'm just bringing it up as another potential. Yeah.
Right, part of the conversation of why we do these is so that then on first and third Mondays, we're not here till midnight because a lot of these are big generating conversations, right? So my assumption is, DeCarlin, is that you need to have this utility forecasting conversation before we do our budget work sessions, because otherwise we're starting budget work sessions the third week in July.
Correct.
Okay. So these are, you need touch points with council before that.
Yes.
So yeah, then I think prioritizing that for the May 11th and then for us to look at that first week of July or whenever for our personnel kind of check in, depending on what happens.
I'll send an email out for your availabilities the first 2 weeks of July.
Okay. The next one is, well, I wonder if we can do that on May 11th also, yes.
If people are available.
Yes, please.
Okay. It's another closed meeting item that we had to push before.
Yeah. So we'll move that closed meeting that we didn't get to at the last meeting until the May 11th for part. And then the next one is, so we just received our police and fire pension actuarial evaluation report. And normally we have that scheduled with us in June, but there's apparently not time on our existing pre-councils. Is that correct?
Matthew was trying to get the actuarial valuations.
Here's one thing I will put out to council. So we have on our calendar upcoming pre-councils. You know, we have Electric Integrated Resource Plan is May 4th. May 11th is now this revenues forecast and utilities discussion. May 18th is the sewer and solid waste cost of service study. This says June 1st is short-term rentals. I'm speaking for myself. I kind of think that the conversation around our pension actuarial is probably a priority over the short-term rental update because I feel like we're still having that conversation about updates to that. So is that one a timely requirement needs to come to us June 1st, or can we push that one back? Yeah, so I think doing the pension, because it's usually in June, and then I think you also want to save your time at that meeting as well. Isn't that an opportunity, and this would be an HR question, isn't that the opportunity that our labor or collective bargaining unions also have that option to choose that meeting to also present to us at pre-council?
So by June 1st, they have to tell us if they're dissatisfied with the progression of the negotiation and then we schedule them at a pre-council.
Okay.
So sometimes they just reserve
there,
right? But we don't know till June 1st.
Okay. So yeah, that might, as we closer, adjust how that June meeting goes. So doing that pension actuarial evaluation at the first meeting in June, and then you said we're doing the renewables ordinance update at the off Monday in June, and then June 15th is our capital improvement projects, as well as interviews for Water and Light Advisory Board and CPRB one vacancy. Is that correct?
Correct. Okay. Two in Water and Light, one in CPR.
Okay. And then we have three budget work sessions in July. And then at this time, July 20th, it says is open for a pre-council. That might be the short-term rental ordinance conversation or something else. Something else will come up, I'm sure. Vera.
Something else will come up. So I'll just make the possibly unpopular statement. I've been really loving these off Monday, second Monday sessions. And I wonder if we just need to move to meeting every Monday. So that our schedule does not get this quickly, like one thing throws us off to the point that we are having to adjust schedules 3 months out. So I'll just throw that out there.
It should be a generative conversation to have at the retreat in a couple of weeks. Thank you.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, Valerie.
does pushing off the short-term rental discussion push off when it will be scheduled for our regular agendas?
You mean like any changes to ordinance coming to us?
Right. So
Yeah. Which I mean, I want to see, but at the same time,
No, that's fine. I just want to know because people ask, and I'd like to, you know, if it changes when we think we'll hear from it next.
Yeah, I would assume we'll definitely ask. Yeah, no ordinance would come to council until we have that pre-council.
Right.
Yeah.
I just want to point out this really is significant in terms of capacity for council and for individuals on the council, mm-hmm. but people who consider running for council. Mm-hmm. And about how supportive the council is to get the work done. And I think it also points to the city is, we've been talking about the airport growing at a rapid rate. The city's been active at a rapid rate, as it appears to me. There are a number of things that we've been taking up and adding on now at this point. So it's, I don't have a solution to that. I'm just saying, let's be aware that there is that issue. I've raised this before. It's just about capacity for everyone.
Yeah,
Valerie. Yeah, this is something that I'll bring up to put a pin in for the retreat. Something I brought up in a check-in with the mayor was having a review time, an expiration date on our city charter. So what I have heard from other cities is that they review their charters every 5 to 10 years. I'm wondering if we need to create a mechanism for the charter to get reviewed on a cycling capacity. that way it's not an elaborate task that citizens pick up on their own to review a document that's 20 years old.
No, that's a good point on that. All right, I think that's it on the scheduling for this moment. And then Sheila has just a couple other things.
I've touched base with most of you, but Simon sent an email. He's going to be out of town April 21st. And then because we're not having a July 6th council meeting, he thought July 7th should be canceled as well. Unless anybody has an objection, I'm gonna move everyone down. So Vera's scheduled for April 21st. She'll be the first meeting in May, the day after the first meeting in May, and continue that train forward. So I will send a new KFRU schedule out and do all the calendar stuff, probably not tomorrow or Wednesday, but by the end of the week. So just giving everybody a heads up that whatever you were scheduled for could change. Obviously, if whatever you're changed to doesn't work, we can try and swap you with somebody else and we can figure that out as we go along.
All right. Anything else for the good of the cause? No? All right. Well, go ahead and adjourn us at 7:32. Appreciate it. Thank you all.